It's time to think bigger.
Elias Pettersson scores!
And think bolder.
Matthew Tkachuk, what a goal!
This is Rintoul and Sermon.
Another chance, great save by Markstrom.
There is shot, rebound, great save by Timko.
On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
What's going on? How's your Friday? I suppose it's implied in the day of the week that it's going to be better than most. Hope you're off to a great start today. We're going to make your day better. That's what we do. Get in on the conversation. 960, 960, 650, 650. Scott Rintoul, and for a fifth consecutive time this week, Jamie Dodd jumping in on Rintoul and Sermon. How are you today, sir?
I am doing fantastic. Excited that it's Friday. Let's go. I'm having fun.
Are you Vegas crowd excited, or are you just end of the week excited?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm quite Vegas crowd excited. That's a completely different level. I'm aspiring to get to Vegas crowd excited. Maybe I'll do that sometime this weekend. But yeah, right now I'm just end of the week excited.
There will be plenty of talk about that game, that series, what lies ahead, the Vegas Golden Knights, and of course the Colorado Avalanche. There is a part of me, and it's the sports fan, I think, in all of us out there, that really wanted a Game 7 on Saturday night, especially with this series, Jamie. It's hard to think, and I hope I'm wrong, but it's hard to think that the series that remain, and this is often the case in the Stanley Cup tournament, are going to live up to what we saw in the series between the Avs and the Golden Knights from just a fun, energy, pace standpoint.
Yeah, it feels difficult. I mean, I think if the favorites win out, and we know they often don't, but if the favorites win out here and we get Vegas and Tampa Bay, that has a chance to live up to it and maybe even surpass it, but that was a fantastic series. And, you know, even though Vegas won the last four in a row to take it in six, I mean, all of those games were still tight, competitive, really, really fun games. So, yeah, I mean, I was rooting for it to go seven as well. But, hey, credit to Vegas. I mean, they had to battle back almost right from the opening whistle in that one. They were able to do it very quickly. So they earned it, and I'm excited for the semifinals, as they're calling it, that we've got lined up here.
Sometimes you get series between two really good teams that don't have moments. This series had moments, and that's really what made it. And Colorado, yeah, you can argue they didn't play up to their capabilities. I certainly would make that argument that they weren't as good as they can show. Vegas did play closer to its ceiling throughout the course of this series, but the moments defined this series, and there are plenty of discussions to get into about it. Vegas there for the third time in 4 years, and I'm talking conference finals. Then there's the Colorado Avalanche. Jamie, a lot of teams say it, but very few have justified reason. The Colorado Avalanche are among the teams that have justified reason. It wasn't supposed to end like this. It really wasn't. This is a team that is better than second round. It gets that draw, and I'm not going to complain about the format because this has affected so many teams. We can go back through the years, and I imagine there's Maple Leafs fans complaining about this with the constant matchups with Boston and having Tampa Bay in the division. That's just the way it happens sometimes, but Colorado, I think anybody out there who watched them this season would say that's better than a second-round team.
It is, and I do think you have to keep the format in mind, right? Like, it's not that it's an excuse for Colorado. I more look at it as a source of frustration for fans, right, that we were guaranteed this matchup couldn't happen any later than the second round, rather than happening potentially in the semifinals or the conference finals, right? So I think it's fair to be frustrated with the playoff format that the NHL has adopted. But you're also right. I mean, this does not feel like a second round team in any way, shape, or form for the Avalanche.
I love that our listeners, Jamie, I'm going to get to their text in a second, 960, 960, 650, 650. They know the feel for the show, so they have an idea of the questions we are probably going to delve into, and they're asking them already on the text line. I want to hit those in a second, but first let's hear from the frustrated Nathan MacKinnon last night. Hey, really good team, really good year. I guess you got to try to run it back. Here's what he had to say.
For sure. I mean, there's always next year. It's all we talk about, I feel like. I mean, I'm going in my ninth year next year, and I haven't won shit, so I'm just definitely motivated, and I'm just, yeah, it just sucks, you know, losing four in a row to a team. And you know, it felt like last year was our first real chance to win, and this year I thought we were the best team in the league. For whatever reason, we just couldn't get it together, and I'm sure in training camp next year we'll figure it out and dissect things and come back better.
Love the clip. I love everything about the way he expressed himself last night. It's a difficult moment, and yet he was holding himself, his team, accountable. We always say next year, I thought we had the best team. yeah, we're going to come back. We're going to take another run at this thing. But I haven't won anything in this league. And that's not a, I want out. I want to go somewhere else. It's the stark realization of how difficult it is to win, Jamie, and how much he wants to do that.
It's a really good clip from McKinnon. It's kind of funny that it got overshadowed a little bit by a bizarre question from a member of the Colorado Avalanche press corps shortly after that quote came out, which we already have a Calgary texter texting in to reference that question. But if you just focus in on what McKinnon said, yeah, I mean, he makes a lot of really good points. You can say all the things like, oh, we'll be back next year, but that doesn't eliminate the frustration. And I also like this unsigned text that comes in to our 650-650 inbox, who says, I refuse to believe that McKinnon is going into his ninth season. And I have to admit, I had a similar reaction when I heard that. I was like, wait, is that true? Oh my goodness, I'm old now. But yeah, I had a very similar reaction there.
The reaction that you're talking about the follow-up question, if you can call it a question, yeah, it's getting a lot of run. It was Adrian Dater who's covered the Avs for a really long time. And this happens with conventional media. Ooh, somebody swore in their press conference. Like, we just had to bleep something there. You all know what word it was. We had to bleep it because of the CRTC and all of that stuff, time of day that we're on. Oh, boy, an athlete swore. Adrian Dater went, hold my beer. You think that's something? Hold on. I'm going to drop an F-bomb into my question. And the reason we're not going to play it for you right now is because it's a visual, Jamie. And I would urge everyone to seek out Nathan McKinnon's availability from last night, because Dater gets on this long, rambling lead-up to a question about the attitude the Avs will have going into next year and whether or not they think too much as opposed to just having to do. And he uses effort as part of the way. But he says the and McKinnon just basically goes like, what? Like,
what is happening here?
He basically shakes off the question like a pitcher shaking off his catcher. I'm not going to throw that. And McKinnon's like, no, whatever you just put together. Next question, basically.
Yeah, I don't know if you were watching the Sportsnet broadcast. Like they were carrying the post game.
Yes,
line.
I was.
So I was watching it, and I'm kind of half paying attention to see what McKinnon is saying. But then I hear the question, and I hear that word. I was like, whoa, what just happened here? What's going on? And then you're right. It was almost just like stunned silence from McKinnon. Like, what is happening here? Why are we doing this?
So we got a lot of comments coming in already today, and this one says, will the Avalanche be this generation's San Jose Sharks? I wouldn't put them to the San Jose Sharks yet, but I understand the line of thinking, because I literally wrote down last night, is Colorado the new Washington? The Avalanche, this is the stat that blew me away last night. The Avalanche have the third longest Final Four drought in the National Hockey League. It is tied with one other team. But there are only two teams, Jamie, in the entire National Hockey League that have a longer streak of not making the conference final. And they are Florida, which has not been there since 1996, and Columbus, which has never been there in its existence. Colorado is tied with the Maple Leafs. The last trip to the conference final was 2002. When you think about it, I guess it makes sense, but that's just not how we think about this team or franchise.
Well, it's surprising only in the sense that this current version is so good right now. But then you think, okay, but this current version has really only been together for a few years now and playing at this level for a few years, because, obviously they had the incredible run in the late 90s and into the early 2000s when they were winning Stanley Cups. But there was also a pretty significant dry period for the Colorado Avalanche until Nathan McKinnon and Landeskog and Rantanen and Makar came around, right? So it doesn't blow me away, but it is the kind of thing. I mean, they're going to get that monkey off their back sooner rather than later, right? Like, you don't want that hanging over you. Why can't this team get past the second round? That's already the conversation. But if they don't clear it in a hurry, it's going to become just, there's going to be so much more pressure heaped on them every time that they do get to the second round with a chance to go to the conference finals.
I feel like we've just entered that portion of the chat. Like, I don't believe we were there yet with this team. And now that this team failed to advance to the conference final, I feel like that's the question, that they are the new Washington in that regard. And there's a similarity with Washington. There is absolutely no shame in losing to the Vegas Golden Knights. That's a really good team. You can argue that that could have been the conference final or Stanley Cup final this year if everything was seeded differently. But it's not. and you got to beat that team. Just like Washington just couldn't get past Pittsburgh. It hasn't been repeated failure against the same team, and there's not the long litany of, I can't believe you didn't get past the second round that Ovechkin's Capitals ended up having, but we're starting to enter that part of it. This text comes in. Sorry, Scott, I don't buy it. Look at the Euros, for example. France, Germany, Portugal in the same group. Those are worthy finals. Got to beat the best to be the best. I'm not arguing against that. I'm not arguing at all. You're not going to hear me today.
I think that was pointed in my direction, maybe.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you this.
Because I was kind of taking the other side of it, yeah.
Yeah. I don't love the format, but you're not going to hear me complain about the format. I am more in tune with the conference format personally, but the format is what the format is. And I agree with the texter. Yeah, you got to beat the best to be the best. The difference here, Jamie, and this is the broken record portion of the show. You have heard me say this since we began this program. It's not always what, but how. And in the case of the Colorado Avalanche, maybe it's who. Here's the difference. The Leafs failed to deliver on expectation, but they did not lose to a team like the Vegas Golden Knights, and that doesn't mean I don't think Montreal can find a way to win this. Toronto has repeatedly not lived up to expectation against teams that, quite frankly, aren't as talented. You can make the argument Vegas is as or more talented, depending on where you assign value on rosters with the Colorado Avalanche. And the difference here is there's not much that needs to change with Colorado. Like, it's very easy, and they should make the case about running it back. That won't be completely possible contractually. But in Toronto, there's a fair question to ask about it. What do we change? Do we need to change? In Colorado, I don't think that's a real question.
It's going to be a question. I just think the answer ultimately is run it back. Like, it's fine to ask the question and kind of go through that process and have that conversation, you know, whether you're a fan, whether you're part of the media there, whether you're part of the team there. I think it's justified to look inward a little bit and say, okay, are there any ways we actually can improve this team? But having said that, yeah, I think the best answer, given where they're at, given the age of their roster and all of that, is, listen, stay the course, run it back. This group is good enough to win. It is good enough to win. We all know that. And I think that's the answer they will land on. But I also understand, and I think it's totally fair, to be asking some tough questions today.
Gramrate says, I wonder how the Lou Lamoriello haters and Joe Sakic lovers are this morning. Sakic hasn't gotten past the second round. Mean Lou has made two conference finals with the New York Islanders. There aren't many who are going to poke holes in the Lou Lamoriello resume. We had a couple people yesterday push back. Hey, he's not a great salary cap GM. He inherited Garth Snow's team. At some point, you just have to look at the resume. And success has followed Lou Lamoriello wherever he went. He's a Hall of Fame general manager. There's not much to poke holes in there. I don't think it's the time yet to take a run at Joe Sakic. Joe Sakic, process-wise, has done things in an extremely admirable way and a way that most franchises would want to emulate. But Joe Sakic, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, they all fall under this umbrella of a lot more pressure beginning next season. I think there was some pressure this year. Next year, there's way more pressure. But we'll get a better sense in the second hour. John Michael Lyles, former Avs defenseman working for Altitude Sports now, we'll get a better temperature check with him in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm excited for that chat with John Michael Lyles. Obviously, he covers that team really closely. I'm sure he'll have some insight into what the mood is like in Denver right now, but it does feel like we're entering the start of the really high pressure phase for Colorado. Like, this is the beginning of that time in the franchise's lifespan where every loss they have in the playoffs from here on out, while these guys are still in their prime, is going to be heavily, heavily scrutinized in a way this one, yeah, it'll be scrutinized, but it's not going to get to the levels that we've seen in Toronto or that we used to see in Washington or that we used to see in San Jose, but they're entering that phase now.
Yeah, I feel like that's where they are, and I feel like it's pretty easy to run it back. They've got some contractual questions to take care of this offseason. Gabriel Landeskog needs a contract. Probably he falls in line of he's coming back, and he'll probably give a little bit of a discount, but we got to take care of our guy. Cale Makar is the really interesting contract here. Obviously, he deserves to get paid. Are they going to do a long-term deal with Cale Makar right now, or will he stay on trend with a lot of RFAs that have come up either last year or this summer saying, the market's not quite right for me to hit max value right now. Let's do the bridge. Better for you, better for me. We'll revisit this in a couple of years.
Yeah, that's what I would bet Cale Makar does. You never know. Everyone's individual circumstances are different. But as you said, that's been very common, and especially with the flat cap scenario, I think that probably makes the most sense. I mean, they've got some contractual things to take care of. I don't think any of it is insurmountable. They'll still be able to run a really deep, talented, impressive team out next year.
960, 960, 650, 650. Many of you are hitting the text lines already. We appreciate it. And you are already to the next portion of what our opening segment was determined to be. This has come in multiple times. Did Nazem Kadri cost another team a playoff loss? This is the third time, Jamie, that Nazem Kadri has been sitting watching because of a suspension while his team was eliminated in a playoff series that he potentially could have made a difference in. Did Nazem Kadri cost his team this series, Jamie? Would he have been a difference maker?
I don't think it's as easy as saying, oh, he cost the team the series. But, I mean, he would have helped a lot, and he easily could have flipped the series. He's an important player for them. And, you know, they have depth down the lineup that can step in, but it's always a domino effect, right? Because now you bring your third-line center up to your second line, and that weakens your second line and your third line. And I thought they were clearly missing some forward depth in this series. And especially when the Mark Stone line was able to really put the clamps down on the top line, the Nathan MacKinnon line, that's when you need to have a talented second unit that can step up, right? And again, I think it's too simplistic to say, Nazem Kadri was out, that's why they lost. But man, I think it could have made a difference, and it might have made the difference. It might have been enough to flip the series.
Okay, let's look at it through this lens then, because he is the second player this round that is sitting there suspended while his team gets eliminated. We all know who the other is. His name is Mark Scheifele. None of us had the Jets getting swept by the Montreal Canadiens. Do the Jets have a better chance of... Obviously, they have a better chance. Which team has a better chance of winning its series with those players in the lineup? Is it... The Jets would have probably won the series with Mark Scheifele there, or the Avs would have probably won the series with Nazem Kadri there. Which case would you argue?
I would go Vegas and Nazem Kadri, just because even without Scheifele, or even with Scheifele in the lineup, I mean, I don't think the Jets have the juice to get past Montreal. Like, there were a lot of problems with that Jets team in that series against Montreal. And unless you want to make the argument that the emotional blow of losing Scheifele kind of made the rest of the team crumble, I don't see how you can look at that series and say, oh, Scheifele would have really turned things around. I mean, their defense looked just disastrous against Montreal's forecheck. So Mark Scheifele's not changing that. Yeah, maybe he pots a couple goals. Okay, you extend the series to five games maybe, but that wasn't a particularly close series. I don't see Scheifele swinging it. And again, not that I'm saying, oh, well, Kadri definitely would have swung the series, but I think he would have had a much bigger impact for Colorado against Vegas than Scheifele would have had for Winnipeg against Montreal.
Yeah, we'll put that out to the listeners. Which suspension was more costly for his team, Scheifele or Kadri? You can weigh in at 960, 960 or 650, 650. I agree with you on this, Jamie. And it's because Scheifele, to me, extends that series against Montreal, but your argument is a good one. Is he the difference between getting swept and winning the series, or is he the difference between it being a six-game series and a Habs win based on the way we saw it played out? And I think it's the latter. Nazem Kadri, I think there's a better case to be made that in a series that was as close as this one was, and the place that the Vegas Golden Knights have a weakness, Nazem Kadri plays. Like, that's where he plays, in the middle of the ice. And we know how effective he can be. And this was a series when Nathan MacKinnon and that top line saw their offense dried up that was screaming for a little bit of secondary support. And that's what Nazem Kadri was brought to Denver to do. I'm with you. I can't sit here and say unequivocally, Nazem Kadri, he plays for the Avs. They are playing in the third round right now. I can't say that. I do think his suspension ends up being more costly because the team he has was that much closer to being able to go to the next round.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. They were closer. They were really missing specifically what he brought to the team. And obviously Winnipeg was missing that with Scheifele. Look, anytime you lose a player like Mark Scheifele, you're going to miss that a lot. But it's just, it wasn't that close a series. I just don't see how one player for Winnipeg would have swung it. And by the way, they had him for game one, right? Colorado didn't have Nazem Kadri at all in this series. At least Winnipeg had Mark Scheifele for game one, and it wasn't enough to turn that in their favor. Unsigned text message comes in disagreeing with us. They say 100% it was Scheifele who would have made the bigger impact. This one though is on our track. Scott, it says if both players give their team two extra wins by being in the lineup, Colorado is winning, whereas Winnipeg would still lose in six. And I mean, to be fair, saying either of those players is worth two extra wins in a series, that's a tall, tall order, right? But the one who had a better chance of achieving that is Kadri.
Greg, the dairy farmer, says, should it now officially be called getting Kadri'd when a player on your team gets suspended and then you lose the series? Is that an official NHL term?
Probably.
Now?
It probably should. He's made a habit of it.
It's a good point. I like that, Greg, the dairy farmer. Nick, the parks board worker, says, this far into the playoffs, depth is the difference maker. Kadri making another stupid hit definitely cost them. Kadri is a shutdown center who can play hard minutes, literally the mold of a player who's a playoff guy. It's exactly why Nick believes Josh Anderson is going to play well in this next round. And we'll get to this next round next segment. Chris Cuthbert's going to call it. He's going to be on his way to Vegas. We're going to talk to him next segment about what he just called between Montreal and Winnipeg and what lies ahead against Vegas as well. I want to get to a couple more of your texts here. Dennis says, would Colorado have won the series if the rules didn't change in the playoffs? That, to me, is alluding to the fact that Colorado, when it was very effective in this series, Jamie had some power plays to work with. Kevin Bieksa highlighted this last night. Hey, when Vegas took more penalties, Colorado had more success. I think that's what Dennis is getting at here. Yeah, maybe you can make that case. You may be able to make that case, Dennis. That's fine. But the Colorado Avalanche were built well enough that it wasn't simply a skill game that cost them here. We have a couple other texters saying, Kelly and Port Moody saying Colorado lost because they turned the puck over way too much. A couple of their best players like Landeskog and Girard really sloppy and inaccurate passes. I think that's more of it, and those players are capable of more. Credit Vegas with the forecheck. Credit Vegas with the pressure. But, yes, Colorado turned the puck over at some very inopportune times. Game 5 ends up being the swing game in this series to me.
And you know, let's not act like Colorado was this power play specialist team that needs time on the man advantage to be effective. They're an incredibly good 5-on-5 team, right? So, yeah, obviously, you always love more power plays, especially when you have a unit like Colorado, and we saw what they were capable of in that series. But they are more than capable also of really crushing teams at 5-on-5 as well. We saw it for stretches in that series against Vegas. So, you know, I don't buy the idea that, they just didn't get the breaks from the refs. They needed to be a lot better 5-on-5, too.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, and while they don't have the type of history the two teams I'm going to mention, this did feel a little bit like Colorado-Detroit back in the day, didn't it? Hey, whoever wins this series, it's not necessarily a slight on the other. It's more just who came through at clutch moments of the series. It doesn't mean you've assembled your team incorrectly. It doesn't mean you need wholesale changes. Somebody's got to lose this series.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, let's keep this in perspective. I mean, these two teams were tied for the most points in the NHL, right? So losing in six games in, by definition, a close competitive series to the other team that had the most points in the NHL, like, that's not exactly something to hang your head about. It's frustrating, and you can dig in and do the autopsy and try to figure out what went wrong, but it's not this sign that, oh my goodness, what were we thinking, putting this team together, and the refs must have screwed us? Like, teams got to lose. Someone has to lose the series. Someone has to lose a really tight series like this.
And here's the comparison I'll use. Carolina lost to the defending Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning. Carolina has a really good roster. It feels like a little something needs to be added. I look at Colorado and I think they'll probably have to do some moving around of deck chairs. I don't think they need to change much. It's just play a little bit better in the series, and that sounds quite trite. But I don't think, like, Carolina's just a step away. I don't feel that same way about Colorado.
Watching Carolina-Tampa, and we heard Ron Bridmore say this even, you saw that there was a talent differential, right? Carolina had some good moments in that series, but you saw that there was a talent differential. I didn't get the same feeling watching Vegas-Colorado, right? That's what we're talking about. Like, this, I fully believe this Colorado team, you know, if they played another seven-game series starting next week, there's a very good chance Colorado could win that series, right? It's just so close between these two teams.
Chris Cuthbert's going to call that next series between the Habs and the Vegas Golden Knights. What's his sense of anticipation for showing up in that barn after seeing a capacity crowd last night in Vegas? Find out next right here on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. That was only 4 days ago. Doesn't it feel like it's been a lifetime, Jamie?
Sure does. It sure does.
And we're going to get this over the next couple of days. There's no hockey tonight. There's no hockey tomorrow. I believe I heard Ryan Pinder say that's the first time in 150 days there's been no hockey game because it's been fast. It's been frenetic. The season got extended because of the Canucks and the COVID outbreak, all of those sorts of things. And because they had to jam this season in the way they did, we've had some hockey every single night forever. 2 days off. As a hockey fan, are you okay with a quick pause, inhale, exhale, relax, and get ready for the third round? Or are you missing your fix tonight and tomorrow?
You know what? Tonight is certainly fine. I wouldn't mind a game on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. A Saturday night game would feel good. I have no issue with the pause tonight. But, yeah, come on. It would be nice to have a game on Saturday. Of course it would.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And at the same time, like, if you give me the option, just keep smashing through, let's see, hockey night every night, I think I would prefer this. I would like just a little bit of an exhale. Just, okay, let's psych myself up. Let's get ready for this Frozen Four and the Stanley Cup Final, whatever it turns out to be. I'll take the pause for a couple of days, especially with some of the great sports we've got on tap over the next 24, 48 hours.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got the NBA playoffs going on. You can watch a little baseball. Like, there's plenty to fill your sports viewing time with. So I don't have a big problem with the pause. Again, you know, the game on Saturday would be nice, but I'm not too broken up about it.
No, I'm okay with it, especially with all the soccer we're going to have. Euro 2020 here in 2021. Yeah, I understand why they didn't rename it and all the marketing and all of that stuff. It starts today. It starts at high noon Pacific time, 1 o'clock Mountain time. Italy and Turkey getting this tournament started. And then you get three matches a day starting tomorrow over the course of the weekend.
Yeah, very, very exciting. I will be I'll be waking up early, certainly on Sunday, to watch England get their tournament started. And I'm really excited to talk to Craig Forrest a little later in the show about the tournament as well, and some Canadian soccer happening this weekend too.
Canada-Haiti goes tomorrow. The return leg goes back in the United States on Tuesday. Certainly something we'll address with Craig Forrest. Great news. If you're a footy fan, if you're interested in this tournament at all, if you're interested in what's going on with Canadian soccer, we found out here this week that Craig Forrest, James Sharman, they are going to be regulars with us for the course of the next month. So every second day on this program, you're going to hear one of those two gentlemen talk about the beautiful game. Should be fantastic stuff.
Yeah, great. Those obviously two incredible soccer analysts, Craig Forrest, also with his history of playing for the Canadian national team and being a star for them. So really excited to have both Sharman and Forrest aboard here for the next month or so.
Made the comment about Carolina being just a little bit away. That's what Brendan Moore said as well. Someone else said, I disagree on Carolina. There's a talent difference only because Tampa's $19 million over the cap or whatever they are over the cap. That falls on deaf ears with me. If any team in the National Hockey League wanted to, go ahead, try it. Sit out a star for the entirety of your season. Go ahead. Go ahead. See if that star can come back and be as effective as Nikita Kucherov in the playoffs, and if you can get to the playoffs without him. Go ahead. Try it. Like, try it. It's available to you next season. Sit your top player or one of your top players out all of next year. Feel free.
Yep, I agree. I agree. It's a loophole. It was there. They exploited it. Good for them.
Yeah, I'll smash the NHL on the cap recapture penalty any day of the week.
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous. That was a valid contract signed at the time. There was nothing preventing it. To retroactively punish a team that way, that they continue to do with some of these contracts, the most high-profile one being Roberto Luongo's and the cap recapture in Vancouver, that's insanity to me. Exploiting current loopholes? It's not. If you want to take that chance, and they did, it's not like there wasn't even a legitimate injury here that we're talking about. It's not like Nikita Kucherov could have started the season, Jamie.
No. No. Or even, I mean, he would have missed, in the best case scenario, if they were rushing him back, he still would have missed a huge chunk of the regular season.
Scott Rentoul, Jamie Dodd, keep those texts coming in, 960, 960, 650, 650. Chris Cuthbert joins us now, and he's had a few days to decompress after calling a second-round sweep by the Habs over the Winnipeg Jets. Chris, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. I kind of wish I had Karen Sermon's schedule, but I'm good.
Yeah, exactly. No, hey, like the old saying goes, when you take time, use time, right? And
yes.
That's okay. So I completely understand. Take some
time. I'm sure she deserves it more than me. So,
well, probably more than any of us.
There you go.
Let's get on to what we're talking about. You got to go into a Bell Center that had 2,500 fans. You've done that on multiple occasions. You talked about what a welcome sight and sound that was. How much have you prepared yourself for what lies ahead in Vegas?
Yeah. Well, I do have some concern of whether I'm going to be able to hear in the headset, and that's a good concern. I'll take that worry at this point. But what a phenomenal atmosphere! It still strikes me as a little bit unnerving that I watched last night. I had to check the COVID rate and the vaccination rate in Nevada, which is not that unlike Canada, really. I'll be in a bubble, and I'm not too concerned about that. I just hope that everybody's not getting too ahead of themselves. But as far as the hockey atmosphere goes, off the charts and spectacular, and can't wait.
Let's go back to the series you just called, because the Montreal Canadiens have surprised everybody, certainly the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then all of us by sweeping the Winnipeg Jets. We can talk about Mark Scheifele, but let's focus on the Habs, because I don't think we've done that enough for most of this postseason. What aspect of the way Montreal has gone about its business in the playoffs is perhaps the most striking to you, Chris?
Well, it's total team, and that might be a real general comment. I think that Carey Price has got his due, but maybe we haven't appreciated fully what the team in front of him has done. Big, strong defense that doesn't let teams get to the net, which is what St. Louis used as their template a couple of years ago. And it's not a team designed with the high-priced talent up front, but it's four balanced lines, and four lines that seem to have developed an identity over the last couple of weeks. I usually have a pretty good feel for a team's lineup after doing it a few times, and if they have to make changes in the lineup because of injury or whatever, I usually know, can anticipate how the coach is going to plug in. I didn't have that sense early on. I don't think the lines really were set early for Montreal, nor were they during the end of the regular season. But from about game four or five on against Toronto, I think, from game six on, they've had the same lineup with the exception of Arturi Lehkonen going in for Jake Evans. And each line has a role and has kind of played up to that role and has been very effective. So, they're deep and they are well-structured, and they're the underdogs, but I'm learning now through two rounds not to underestimate what the Canadians bring to the table.
You always need great goaltending to get to this point of the playoffs. So that aside, is the common thread that binds with the four finalist teams that defense that you described, the way it plays, the size, the physicality, all of that?
Yeah, I think it's another reminder that as much as the game is changing and has changed over the last few years, that seems to be a consistent, that big blue line. And the Canadians Shea Weber's probably playing as well as he's played all year. Ben Chiarot, I think, is an amazing story. And I asked about Ben Chiarot because in the last 20 games of the regular season, or he went through a stretch coming back off a broken hand, where he was minus 20 in 20 games. And I know there are lots of people that don't buy the plus-minus, but I think everybody would agree that Ben Chiarot really struggled when he cut back in the lineup. But they got a week to reset before the Leaf series. The team got to practice for the first time in like a month and a half. Ben Chiarot got to practice and reset for the first time since he'd been back off injury. And I thought from 3-1 down against the Leafs on, he has been really terrific. And they'll have to do without Jeff Petrie for at least game one, but Petrie's game got better and better. And Joel Edmondson has proven that he's just been a terrific signing. So that blue line has been a big story for sure.
Chris, there's been a lot of people pointing out that, look, sure, Montreal, they're going to be the underdogs in this series, but they're actually going to be a pretty tough matchup for Vegas because they have those big bodies on the blue line. They can keep teams from getting to the center of the ice, and that's something that Vegas has struggled with in recent playoff series as well. Do you see it that way, too, that, you know what, this Montreal team is actually built to give Vegas a pretty difficult time here?
Well, I think we've seen they're built for the playoffs and for whoever is whoever they're facing, but that Vegas team plays at a real high pace, and I noted that last year. I couldn't wait for the Vancouver-Vegas series last year based on the way the two teams had played the series before. And then it struck me when the puck got dropped in that series how much faster Vegas seemed to play. And if not for the work of Markstrom early and Demko late, especially Demko, that series probably wouldn't have lasted as long as it did. And so I'm really curious now to see Montreal go in there and play a team that plays at a pace that maybe they haven't seen yet this year.
You know, you mentioned last year for the Canucks, Demko and Markstrom, but especially Demko stepping up. So we know Carey Price is going to have to be really sharp in this series for Montreal. Beyond Carey Price, is there another Canadiens player you look at and say, that guy needs to have a really strong series if Montreal is going to win this?
Well, I think, just to go off Price, and because Peter DeBoer is the coach on the other side, they could get, the Vegas Golden Knights could get priced in this series for sure. I think what's great about the Canadiens is that they have won six in a row. They've impressed everybody, and yet there's still room to grow here. I think Kotkaniemi has played well, but there's still more room for him to improve. Josh Anderson hasn't scored since the first game of the Leafs series. And the guy I'm really curious about, but it's a big team he's going to play, but Cole Caulfield's a guy that's been all around it, and I bet that he has never gone this long without scoring. But even with that said, he's played well. I mean, and just have to look at the overtime goal by Toffoli to clinch the series against Winnipeg. But I'm curious about Caulfield, if he can get one, how that might just to give him a spark. But I just think right across their lineup, nobody is overachieving, and everybody might have a little bit more to give, which is one of the reasons I think you shouldn't write the Canadiens off.
Chris Cuthbert of Hockey Night in Canada joining us here, as he does every single Friday on Rintoul and Sermon. Jamie Dodd in today. I asked this question earlier this week. Do you want Montreal to win the Stanley Cup? We had a lot of respondents, and around 60% of our respondents online on our text message inboxes said, yeah, I do. And if I'd asked it 3 weeks before, I wouldn't have got the same response. Whether it's that nobody overachieving, everybody pulling their own weight, whether it's the personalities on this team, what aspect of the Montreal Canadiens do you believe makes this year's team likable?
I think it's the mix. I think we all have respect for guys like Eric Staal and Corey Perry and Shea Weber, but I think it's easy to like a team with young kids who are coming up, like Nick Suzuki and Caulfield and Kotkaniemi. I think everybody respects the work ethic of a guy like Brendan Gallagher. I just maybe think that they bring a lot of different elements to the table. Even, and he's only played one game, but a really popular guy in Montreal is Alexander Romanov, who, you know, his passion for the game, I think, really shines through. I mean, he couldn't wipe the smile off his face walking onto the ice for warm-up in his first Stanley Cup playoff game. So I think there's a lot of different personalities on this team, and then there's that extra uber-cool goaltender named Carey Price, who's a superstar, who is playing every bit like the superstar that he's been touted as for the last decade. But a lot of reasons, I think, why people are embracing this team beyond that they're the only Canadian team left.
They're sifting through the reasons as to why they lost in Winnipeg. I see that Paul Maurice is speaking today. Same with Kevin Cheveldayoff. And Mark Scheifele is certainly at or near the top of the list when it comes to that past series. I know it's a hypothetical, so it's hard to deal in those. But which suspension do you believe cost his team more? Is it Mark Scheifele with Winnipeg? Is it Nazem Kadri with the Colorado Avalanche?
Oh, no question for me that it was Scheifele. I mean, Scheifele is their best forward, and that's 2 years in a row. We just had to look back to the impact last year when he was out after three shifts in the series against Calgary because of injury. This was self-inflicted, and it just took everybody. I mean, now you've got everybody playing. It's amazing how teams with one or two missing pieces, once those guys are in the lineup, everybody kind of clicks into the right spot in the lineup, Andrew Kopp just didn't seem to be right at center on a second line, and it just seemed to affect right through the lineup. Kadri was a missing piece for sure that could have been big, but that's a deep Colorado team that could have used him, but still, you know, there were a lot of other reasons they lost that series, and I was a little surprised that the defensive detail was kind of lacking as that series went on against Vegas, and again, Kadri would have helped, but there were a lot of other reasons they didn't win.
You know, Chris, for all, I mean, we've been talking about, you know, the defense of Montreal and the forward and the forecheck for Vegas, but I think the most intriguing storyline, it might be the duel between the two veteran goaltenders who are playing some of their best hockey of their careers right now in Carey Price and Marc-Andre Fleury. And, you know, as we look at it, and as I said, as we can talk about the forecheck and Montreal's defense and all of that, but could this series easily come down to which of those future Hall of Fame goalies outduels the other one?
It could, and it's really a neat story for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is how different the personalities are. I mean, Price is so calm and composed and reserved, and Fleury is so outgoing. And I don't know if we've fully given Marc-Andre Fleury. Everybody likes Marc-Andre Fleury for good reason, but I sometimes wonder if we really appreciate what he has done in his career, Stanley Cup-wise, and now as a Vezina finalist. You see all those playoff wins that the next one's going to vault him number three, number four all time. He's in a group with nothing but Hall of Famers now, and he's pretty well, I think, secured that legacy in the last bit. But he's a compelling story for other reasons. I mean, he was not their choice last year. He sat on the bench as a $7 million goaltender last year, and had to endure the agent's caricature tweet of the sword in the back and from Pete DeBoer, and somehow stayed upbeat and re-racked and has been better than ever at an age where you're supposed to be in decline. So I think both goaltenders are destined for the Hall of Fame, and both goaltenders could win this series.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it was such a remarkable stat. I think it caught a lot of us by surprise when Marc-Andre Fleury was named a Vezina finalist and it was turned out to be the first time in his career. I certainly was a little caught off guard by that when it was announced. Another interesting storyline for me in this one is Max Pacioretty coming back to play against the team that he used to be the captain of in the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, and just looking at Pacioretty's line with Stone and Chandler Stephenson in general, I kind of feel like they have to be as dominant as they were against Colorado, where they really took out Colorado's top line for Vegas to perform well in this series.
Well, they'll have a different, and I guess the matchup would be against the Suzuki line, but it's not as blatantly obvious that you know, they have to go up against you know, the best line in hockey or one of them. It'll be different, but and maybe that means that they can be more significant offensively too. But Pacioretty's been great since he came back off injury at the end of the year and early on in the playoffs, kind of made that heroic return in Game 7. I was a little surprised last night. I immediately double-checked back to his playoff record with the Canadiens. Max Pacioretty's already scored more goals as a Vegas Golden Knight in the postseason than he did in a lot longer stretch in Montreal. And he could very well be a dominant figure in the series.
Carey Price will do his best to make sure that doesn't happen. Something I don't think we've talked about very much. It'll probably get some run here because people have a couple of days to pour over everything. The four starting goalies in the Final Four are all first-round picks, and we frown so much on picking goalies in the first round, don't we?
I did see that, and it did strike me as unusual for sure. And I mean, you could you could make any one of them Vezina Trophy nominees in any year. I mean, this is not just a guy getting hot, and you wonder if he can sustain it. These are all very talented guys that have a track record and could win a series on their own for sure.
Nathan MacKinnon was somewhat hot after last night's loss. I understand it. I completely empathize with his frustration. I'm not sure you've ever done an interview where you dropped an F-bomb, though, the way Adrian Tater did in that postgame, have you?
Yeah, that's probably not in the usual playbook. I didn't like the question even without the F-bomb, but the F-bomb kind of put it over the top. But with that said, I you know what, players, I don't like criticizing the way other players go about their business, and I'll let a blogger in Colorado do what he thinks is best for him. But you know, the frustration of MacKinnon's an interesting thing. I think Nate MacKinnon is as good a player as there is in the NHL, and every time I hear a conversation that says Connor McDavid is clearly the best player by far in the league, I always think immediately you haven't watched Nate MacKinnon enough. But with that said, I think there are times in a playoff series where he carries that frustration around a little bit more than he needs to. And it'll be interesting going forward that, you know, here he is saying 9 years in and he hasn't won you know what yet. And it'll be interesting to see if he changes his approach at all. I sometimes think he's so good that he tries to do everything himself. And there's another stat you guys just gave, the one about the goaltenders. I think there's another stat about how few series Hart Trophy candidates have won in the last few years. And I guess Kucherov's the exception. But yeah, McDavid and MacKinnon, there's some common themes there that they've still got hurdles to go over.
You're absolutely right about that. It's pretty surprising. I guess it's somewhat surprising in a sport where the top guns usually get theirs that MacKinnon, McDavid, Matthews, this year's Hart Trophy finalists, have never been beyond the second round between them.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that's going to change, but in the short term, it kind of tells you that it never has been a one guy sport. And look at Montreal. I mean, they're here in large part because of their fourth line, and even last night, didn't the Golden Knights fourth line score twice in a in a game decided with an empty net by three, but those were big goals by Kolasar and Carrier to put them over the top, and that's the nature of the sport. You need more than just the big guns.
You've seen a lot of things in your career. You have never seen the Montreal Canadiens competing for the Campbell Conference Trophy in Vegas, and you'll get to see that very soon. Safe travels, Chris. Thank you very much for your time. We look forward to the call on Monday.
All right, boys, all the best. And, boy, I hope Karen's vacation is going well.
So do we. Thank you very much.
Don't worry. You won't have to put up with me next week, Chris. She'll be back. Don't worry.
She'll be back. I'll give her the business next week.
Thank you very much, Chris. That is Chris Cuthbert of Hockey Night in Canada joining us here. Yeah, he's on his way to Vegas. And, yes, they did decide they're going to award the trophies. And Vegas, Montreal, winner will get the Clarence Campbell Bowl. Prince of Wales Trophy goes to the winner between the New York Islanders, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. We will turn the page into the next hour. There's reason that an interview from yesterday is going to be played today. We'll explain why next on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Keep those texts coming in. 960-960-650-650. Jamie, the Jack Adams finalists announced today. We've seen this steady rollout of awards finalists over the month of June, and it culminates today with the Jack Adams nominees. There's no slam dunk award winner here. And for most of the awards we've seen, well, okay, we kind of know who's winning that. This one all comes down to how much weight you assign to specific criteria, I should say, when you vote. Here are your finalists. Rod Brind'Amour in Carolina, Joel Quenneville in Florida, Dean Evason in Minnesota.
Good, great group. No surprising candidates there, given the seasons their teams had. All deserving candidates, I would say. And yeah, the Coach of the Year is such a funny award in a lot of ways because it has so much to do with the expectations of the team. And you do feel like there's certain coaches you could almost give it to every year, right? Like John Cooper could be a nominee every year, but his team's already always loaded, so he doesn't have that bump from, oh, he got this team to overachieve, so he doesn't get the nomination. Similar thing with Barry Trotz, right? I feel like he could be a nominee every year for this award.
I agree with both of those assessments, and I think the only guy that people might say, oh, how come he's not on the list? And it's not a slight to any of these three because I think it's an extremely strong group, and I actually believe they got this right. The guy that isn't on the list, that's not in good favor right now because his team fell out in the first round, but when you think about the challenges he had during the season, is Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh. They won that division, Jamie. Evgeny Malkin was hurt a bunch. They had injuries in that lineup, and he found a way to get that team to the top seed in the East. He had a really good year coaching. If he had been in this group instead of one of the three that we're going to talk about here momentarily, I would not have been surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a major problem with that either. I do think he probably suffers a little bit, you know, even though there were the injuries, from the idea of, oh, well, you know, he has Sidney Crosby, he has Chris Letang, it's the Penguins. Of course they were good again, and that maybe cost him a little bit in voting for this award.
There's no wrong answer with this group. Rod Brindamore's taken Carolina to a place where it's a brand-new standard. The bar is much higher now. Joel Quenneville, he's changing the way that we think about the Florida Panthers. Hey, always talented, always on the outside looking in. Dean Evason took a group that nobody expected to be playoff bound, and he made them into a team that was really close to Vegas and Colorado in the standings for the bulk of the year and gave Vegas a handful in round number one. There's no wrong answer with this group. Who would you give it to if you were awarding it?
I think I would give it to Rod Brindamore. And part of the reason is because I almost feel like you can't capture the idea of best coach by just looking at one season. I know I'm kind of stepping out of the bounds of the definition and the criteria of the award a little bit, but being a great coach, it's not just about, you know, what happens from puck drop of game one to the final game of the regular season, right? It's about your entire tenure with that team and how you have set that team on a certain direction. And you know, it'd be one thing if I felt one of them had a runaway better season than the other ones, but they all had really good seasons with their teams. They all helped them overachieve. And I just look at Rod Brindamore's track record in Carolina and what he's done over a span of years with that team. That would break the tie for me, and I'd go with Rod Brindamore.
Yeah, and it is supposed to be single season, and maybe the better single season argument is he won the division that had the most elite teams. If we want to consider Florida an elite team, do we think Florida suffers from, hey, you just happened to get the wrong matchup, you're better than your playoff status being out in the first round indicates?
Yeah, that's a good argument. Again, if unlike me, you want to be a stickler for the rules, which is probably a fair way to go about it. If you actually had a vote for this award, that's a very strong argument.
Well, we've heard a lot of Rod Brindamore talk on this show in the last 24 hours, and we're going to play a clip here from Kevin Weeks. He surprised both of us yesterday when I asked him who the next head coach of the New York Rangers should be, and he said Rod Brindamore, and I went, I don't think he's on the market. Like, that was my original reaction, but Weeks laid out his argument as to why and how concerning it should be if you're a Hurricanes fan that this isn't done yet. You followed up by asking Kevin Weeks, what makes Rod Brindamore so good, and here's what he had to say.
Hands down, I'll just echo what I was talking to some people that are close to the situation about yesterday. Hands down, my man Rod Brindamore, another BC native, my boy Rod Brindamore. Hands down, it's not close. There's some other outstanding coaches out there, but you know, I was privileged enough to play with Roddy. We had that family atmosphere in Carolina, which is why we went to the Stanley Cup final, and ultimately they ended up going back and winning it against the Edmonton Oilers. And look, when it's all said and done, I really believe that he is one of the best culture shapers in sports. The way he's able to shape culture, you know, I watched it firsthand and playing with him, work ethic beyond off the charts. A lot of the same traits that I was talking about with Lou and Trotsky. You know, Roddy exemplifies those things. He doesn't demand them of you. He shows them. He lives them. He breathes them. And his players love playing for him. The way he treats the staff, the trainers, all the equipment workers, medical, arena staff, everyone. He's just, I said this on the NHL Network, what are we today? Thursday? I think I said this Monday. And then when they were eliminated the other night, if I was the Rangers, I would back up 4 Brinks trucks and drive them straight down to Raleigh. Roddy, what do you want? What's it going to take? Blank check. We got all the cash here, whatever you want. Because he's that transformative of a coach in person. And quite frankly, a great leader. You look at what he's done in Carolina. They took way too long to make him the head coach. And they finally did, to their credit. And you've seen the results in the last 3 years. So many players have flourished under him. So many people have flourished under him. And I'll say what I said on TV, on our network. The fact that it's gotten this far, it's a head scratcher. it's almost as though it's a never-ending audition. And believe me, I know what that's like. He proved himself 80 million days ago. Like, I don't even understand why they don't have him on a fair market value contract. He's making entry-level player money to coach that team. It's a head-scratcher. So I know for a fact, be it the Rangers and about three other clubs that are salivating right now, that are looking and waiting to see if he's going to re-sign. And even if he does re-sign, it's going to be way under market values. And they just took too long to sign him and appreciate him. So if, I don't know, man, if I'm him or if I'm another club, you mentioned the Rangers, I think he'd be an amazing fit here in Broadway. He'd be awesome. For all the really good young players, plus Panarin that they have, who's top five player in the world, Adam Fox, I think, is going to win the Norris for them. They've got a lot of great pieces now. Zibanejad, their goalies are good, even with my boy Henrik not playing there anymore, as in Lundqvist. I think that'd be an amazing... He's the guy. How about I say that? Definitively, he's the guy.
There are a lot of great adjectives you can throw around about coaches, executives in sports, innovative, but best culture shaper in sports, among the best culture shapers in sports, the compliments don't get any better than that.
No, and that's what I was trying to get at when I was saying, you know, the thing that would tilt my vote to Brind'Amour is the work he's done in his entire tenure in Carolina. That's what I'm talking about, building that culture, building that belief in a franchise that, you know, yeah, they've won the Stanley Cup, but outside of that kind of blip, they don't have this long culture of winning, right? This is not the Montreal Canadiens, who has this incredible history going back decades. Like, he really had to build that from the ground up, and that's, I think we underrate how difficult that is and how special as a coach you have to be to do that.
There was a lot of coaching news yesterday. Kind of just slid in among everything that was happening. Columbus, we've decided on our next head coach, and it's not a name you were probably thinking. BC boy, in fact, though many may not know, Brad Larsen, born in the cusp, grew up in Vernon. He is now the next head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's been an assistant there for many seasons. Jamie, they went with an internal hire there, which I think is somewhat off the radar for most people who are looking at the Columbus situation.
Well, we've all been doing the, you know, coaching carousel exercise and trying to match the former NHL head coaches, but with experience, to the teams with openings. But you forget, look, these guys, yeah, they know their assistants, they know their AHL coaches, right? And they're not necessarily going to go out and get the guy who just got fired somewhere else. Sometimes they want to move internally.
Gerard Gallant was on our show earlier this week. He was on 960 this morning as well, as was Elliot Friedman. And Elliot Friedman had this to say about Gallant potentially making that trip back to Columbus. They talked to him. Here's how close Elliot thinks it might have been.
I think Columbus took a long look at him. I do think he was very much in the mix there. I think one of the things they were talking about was there a number that both sides could get to. And I think they talked about it. I think they were really considering it. But ultimately they went with Larsen, and that says to me that Columbus is looking at a bit of a rebuild here. I do think he's very high on the Rangers list. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up there at all. I know from the beginning, once the Rangers had an opening, they saw Gallant as a very serious contender there.
We had him on. He's a great interview. We heard all of the plaudits coming back, whether they were from Roberto Luongo or the players from that team, Andrew Mangiapane, who we had on last week and ended up being the tournament MVP over in Latvia, spoke very highly of him as well. It does feel like it will be an oversight if he's not coaching somebody's team next year.
I would be very surprised. I think he'd be a great fit anywhere. He'd be a great fit in New York. I've said many, many times, obviously, it's obvious, but I think he would be a fantastic fit for the Seattle Kraken. And yes, given his track record, it will be pretty strange, to be honest, and very surprising. I know, you know, teams fall in love with other candidates or they want to go internally. There's a lot of different considerations that go into it, but I'll be very surprised if he's not coaching in the NHL next year.
Let's get to what they're saying a couple minutes early, because we've got a lot in there. There was some coaching news in Western Canada yesterday as well. A lot of NHL fans have a keen eye on the changes that might be coming in Calgary. I'm not sure this is what they were thinking, but they got some yesterday in terms of the coaching staff. Cale McLean, who's been coaching the Stockton Heat, he gets bumped up. He'll be on Daryl Sutter's bench, as will Kirk Muller. He was most recently with the Canadiens. I heard him say yesterday when he was on with Pat Steinberg, he still takes a lot of pride, and it was truthful. There's no bitterness about it. He really hopes the Habs have a lot of success, had a lot of good things to say about his former team. His next team now, the Calgary Flames. Here's what Kirk Muller, longtime coach, 15 seasons, whether it's an assistant or the head coach in Carolina for 3 years, the last 15 in the National Hockey League, 16 will come in Calgary. Here's how his vision aligns with the head honcho in Cowtown.
I think the big thing is that we know that there's no shortcuts in winning. And I think the key is that if you get a group of guys that really believe in each other and understand that it's a tough leg and a lot of demands, and if you play the game the right way without the puck, you're going to have an opportunity to score a lot of goals. And I think when you put that all together and you compete every night, you work hard every night, and you put a lot of accountability on each other, you know, a lot of good things can happen with a hockey team.
Really glad to see Ryan Huska get retained in Calgary. I think he's a really good young coach. Got to coach a couple of games while Daryl Sutter was going through protocol before he got behind the bench. He'll remain there as well. Jamie, there's the similarity between Vancouver and Calgary this week in that both teams made an addition from outside of an associate coach, Bradshaw in Vancouver, Kirk Muller in Calgary, that will kind of have their hands in everything and bring an outside perspective into the organization.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you heard, you know, obviously whenever you bring an assistant coach and you want there to be, I think you want there to be a mix of, look, they're already on the same page, but they also have new ideas to bring in, right? Like, that's the idea. You don't want to bring in someone who just strictly agrees with you. But I did think it was interesting when they asked Kirk Muller about it yesterday in Calgary, you know, okay, what do you and Daryl Sutter have in common? The first thing he said was no shortcuts, right? And we heard so much from Daryl Sutter, as especially once the Flames were obviously out of playoff contention, about basically trying to find the players that were taking shortcuts and trying to find the ones that weren't taking shortcuts on the Flames, right? Like, that was a lot of what Daryl Sutter was doing in Calgary last year, and that really jumped out to me, that that's going to be the message. There's a very specific style of play they want to have there in Calgary with Daryl Sutter and now Kirk Muller, and it really feels like if there are certain players that they think aren't capable, aren't willing of playing that style, they're probably not going to be long for a Flames jersey.
It also speaks to me to the comfort that both Daryl Sutter and Travis Green have in who they are as people and as coaches, because they're bringing in voices that they want to be somewhat critical. And if you see something that you don't like, tell me. Doesn't mean we'll always agree, but they're not bringing in younger assistants in either case, where they're quite often when you're in the infancy of your career and there's somebody who's been around for a while and you're just cutting your teeth, well, maybe you're not as keen to speak up right away. I think Bradshaw, based on the interview I heard earlier this week,
yep,
he sees something, he's going to say something. I get the exact same sense from Kirk Muller.
Yeah, and as you mentioned also, both of them kind of given a wide-ranging portfolio, right? Like Bradshaw here in Vancouver, he's not going to be just the PK coach, he's not going to be just the power play coach or just the defense coach. He's going to have a lot of input in a lot of different areas, and it sounds like Kirk Muller is going to have a similar role for Daryl Sutter in Calgary.
Ian Clark, he will be very specific in his role, and he gets the term he wanted, five-year deal. It matches with Thatcher Demko. It makes sense on a lot of levels. Demko will be obviously relieved, though we haven't heard from him. We heard his plea to have Ian Clark back as the goaltending coach. Ian Clark did a very good interview this morning on the morning show with Halford and Brough in Vancouver on Sportsnet 650, and he talked about the relationship with Thatcher Demko and specifically about the mental aspect of it with his young goaltender.
Well, I mean, for me, it starts with sort of the non-negotiable items. And for me, as I said, it's a partnership. But on the non-negotiable end, I really have two. And that is, you play the most critical role on the team. I think we can all agree that that is often the case for the goaltending position. And so it would only make sense that you're going to be our hardest worker. It would make no sense whatsoever for the guy that plays that critical role not to be the team's hardest worker. And the same goes for the competitiveness. So I expect them to be the fiercest competitor on the team. I expect them to be the hardest worker. Now, I'm sure other players on the team would profess that about themselves. But at the end of the day, when I sit down with a goalie, they have to embrace those ideals. And everything else for me is essentially is up for negotiation, but those two are not. And so really, I think for Thatcher, who Thatcher is a goalie that, you know, through his amateur career was always the guy, played college hockey where he was the guy, you know, when you get to the professional level, and the same thing happened a little bit with Corey Schneider back in the day, came, you know, through prep school and through college. It was always the guy, And all of a sudden you're now a backup. And now all of a sudden, what does that mean? Now you got to sort of switch gears from that, that sort of top of the food chain position mm-hmm. to not the bottom of the food chain, but certainly a supporting role. And Thatcher really embraced those times to dig in on his game. And so that whole responsibility side of on the work side is important. And then, of course, your job as a goalie is to inspire the group. And what does that mean? That means obviously making key saves in key moments. That means obviously, you know, to the best of your ability, not, you know, playing mistake-free goal. That means always having great body language out there where you're never sort of shifting or deflecting responsibility from your role. You're the only guy responsible for stopping pucks and stopping them from going across the goal line. And I don't have a problem putting that pressure on them. If they can't handle that pressure, then really they shouldn't be in the business. So I'm going to put a lot of pressure on our goalies to be the very best and step up to the plate when it counts. And, you know, those are things that certainly Thatcher has begun to build in his game.
Ian Clark confirming what many have said about his reputation. He's not an easy coach. He's tough. He's demanding. He's going to push. It comes from a good place. I thought the part about the non-negotiables was very interesting, Jamie. The non-negotiables for my goaltenders, you have to be the hardest worker. You have to be the most competitive person on the team because you play the most critical position.
It's an interesting perspective, and we often kind of exempt goalies from the discussion of not necessarily hard work, but being competitive, right? Because you don't see evidence of it the same way. They're not really in scrums very often, you know, they're not finishing their checks, blocking shots, doing all of those things that we tend to associate with a person who's really in the fight. But I love Ian Clark's point there, which is, hey, it's the most important position on the ice, so you better be setting the example. You better be leading the way when it comes to working hard and being competitive.
Yeah, and being competitive doesn't mean you got to skate down to the other end and fake fight the other goalie. Like, that's not what you have. No. You don't have to do that.
You don't have to be Jordan Binnington?
No, you don't have to do that. But you see it with different goaltenders, and it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. It's hard to get any type of response out of Carey Price or any type of outward expression of emotion, but we all know how competitive Carey Price is. You look at Marc-Andre Fleury in Game 5 when he whiffs on the shot at the end of the first period, and we saw that really quick burst of emotion where he's upset with himself, but then also, I got this, guys. And you watch how he plays that next period, and that's the mental aspect Clark's talking about, the competitive aspect he's talking about.
Well, and even in Game 6 last night, right, he lets in one he's not happy with in the first minute of play, in the first 30 seconds of play, has a similar emotional reaction, but then is able to channel it and lock it down and help his team win the game.
Yeah, might have wanted to go after one of his defensemen as well. Man, how does Devon Toews get as open as he did in the first 30 seconds of the hockey game off the rush?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I do not know.
We will turn our attention to one goaltender here, Tuukka Rask. We talked about him a lot yesterday. What might his future hold? And none of us really knew. This was pretty strong stuff from Tuukka Rask, who, by the way, is going to have surgery for a torn labrum in his hip. People talked about whether it was the back this year, what the injury might be. He's got a torn labrum in his hip. He wanted to play. He tried to fight through it. Jamie, just before we get to the clip, he was kind of in a no-win situation in Boston. There are people who have said, well, you know, Tuukka Rask, he'll bail at any opportunity. That has not been fair from my perspective, or I think yours, but that's been one of the things that those who are critical in that market have said about him.
It is, and it does seem like no matter what he says in the media at this point, no matter how he performs, what he does, there's always going to be people who are not giving him the benefit of the doubt, right? And are reading things in the worst possible light because they've got it in their heads that they don't like Tuukka Rask, basically.
This will play well, however. Maybe a few of the haters, if you will scale back. After he said this about his future, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. We talked about, hey, could he go here? Could he go there? Tuukka Rask says there's only one place he wants to play.
No, like I said before, I'm not going to play for anybody else than the Bruins. This is our home. You know, we have three kids. Kids enjoy here. They have friends in school. We have friends. At this point in my life and career, I don't see any reason to, you know, go anywhere else, especially, you know, with the health I'm looking at now, like recovery time, 5 to 6 months. So hopefully it works out that I recover well, and then we can talk about contracts when time's right for that.
Tuukka going, Hootie and the Blowfish, I only want to be with you. I'm staying with you, Boston. I'm not going anywhere, man.
Boston or bust. There you go. Yeah, that probably goes a little bit, at least, in towards, you know, helping smooth things over with the fans there.
You would think. And whether they want him or not, I'll bet they'd take him at a reasonable ticket. That didn't sound like a guy who's going to demand the moon.
No, there's definitely a price tag they'll take him at. How could you not, really, with his record of production? It's just a question of finding that middle ground where both sides are happy. But look, when a player comes out and says that, yeah, that probably means the team can get a pretty good deal.
Easier when you've made over $60 million in your career, as Tuukka Rask had. Hey, maybe you could win $70 million tonight. What is it, Lotto Max up to $70 million tonight in Canada? Is that what it is?
I think it is.
Sounds like
not bad.
I got a plan this afternoon. Go buy me a ticket. We're not going to get to everything on what they're saying, which means we will play the Russell Wilson clip a little bit later on in the program, because we got to make way for John Michael Lyles, former defenseman with the Colorado Avalanche, doing a fantastic job at Altitude Sports as an analyst. I don't know if he'll conduct the interview with us from his wine cave, but find out next on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
Wow, now I'm inspiring music choices, or at least Tuukka Rask is inspiring music choices based on the way I interpreted his comments in Boston this morning, Jamie.
I can't remember the last time I heard a Hootie and the Blowfish song, to be perfectly honest. It has been a while.
I'm with you. I don't know why that's what I thought of coming out of Tuukka Rask saying, I only want to be in Boston. Maybe it's just the way that I wrote down the clip that we were going to throw to, but kind of work. We were talking a lot about goalies,
yeah,
and coaches last segment as well. Ian Clark talking about competitiveness. Tuukka Rask battling through injuries. We had a text that was related.
Yeah, we did. So, I mean, I was talking about, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell which goalies are competitive. We don't think, oh, that goalie's being really competitive out there because they're not, you know, running around finishing their checks or blocking shots. And an astute listener in Calgary texted in, I sure hope the goalies are out there blocking shots. That's kind of their number one job.
Yeah. Yeah, you should probably be good at that.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, that's something you want to see out of your goalie, usually.
What makes you a good goalie? Puck handling skills? I got a great shot.
Yeah. I'm very competitive. Yeah.
Yeah. How are you at stopping the puck? That black disc that they shoot around out there, are you good at getting in the way of that with different body parts? I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay. I wouldn't say that's my top skill. Thank you. We'll take a look at the rest of the resume and the video you sent us, and we'll get back to you. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Yeah, number one part of the job. They're pretty important to be able to do that one. So thank you to the Calgary listener, unsigned, for straightening me out there.
John Michael Lyles will join us here after the Colorado Avalanche lose four straight. They bow out of the playoffs at the hands of the Vegas Golden Knights. Nathan MacKinnon hasn't been past the second round. You heard his frustration last night. What happened to the Colorado Avalanche in this series? We will ask John Michael Lyles that question. A couple other texts just before we get to him. Minor Matt, regular texter to the program, says, Ian Clark sounds like that pain-in-the-ass teacher most of us probably had in school at some point that you seriously disliked because of their hard-ass nature. However, the people that embrace that person's techniques and tactics seem to always get better and learn to love the process. I agree with that, Minor Matt, and there's always the way that you deliver the message because it seems difficult at the time. We've talked about this on multiple occasions. Rod Brind'Amour is a good example of this from a coaching standpoint as well. Yes, demanding, but it comes from a place of caring. And if you bridge that gap with your athlete, with your student, whatever it is, Jamie, this person's doing this because they care about me. Yeah, the work's still hard, and there's going to be days where you roll your eyes a little bit and say, I'm not sure I want to do this, but you know it's coming from a very good place.
And there's the baseline of respect that has to be there too, right? I think that's a huge part of this conversation. And that's something when we talk about, you know, hard-ass coaches or old-school coaches, right? And people say, well, it can get results, but there has to be the respect there. If the respect is there, then yes, absolutely it can. I think that's what Minor Matt is talking about with Ian Clark. But as you say, yeah, you have to understand that it's coming from a place of trying to get you to be better, and there does have to be just that level of respect between the two parties too.
Someone else texting in about Rod Brind'Amour. I thought he was signed already, $1.8 million. Okay, so here's the story with that. Elliot Friedman reported that a few weeks ago. He confirmed this morning on his radio hit, yes, that's kind of what the agreement is, but it's also not signed yet. And that's what led to Kevin Weeks talking about Rod Brind'Amour yesterday and maybe leave some speculation as to his future. Okay, people kind of know what the details are supposed to be. So why hasn't it been signed? Like, why is that? What's that all about? And if it isn't signed, is there a chance? Are you telling me there's a chance? Could something be swayed here? We will wait and see. Let's head to Denver, where they're trying to figure out exactly what happened in that series between the Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights as the season ended abruptly last night in Sin City. John Michael Lyles, former NHL defenseman, now an analyst with Altitude Sports, joins us this morning. Thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
No problem whatsoever. We're not television, so you probably don't have to conduct this from your wine cellar, right?
A little early for the wine cellar today, although it did run a little bit late last night.
I was going to say, maybe it's not. Maybe there was no sleeping after the way this series went down. I know this is a very broad question. What happened to the Colorado Avalanche in this series?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, they played against a really good, you know, Vegas Golden Knights team. And, you know, I game one, I think everybody, that was more an anomaly than anything, I would say. You know, the Avs are really good, but, you know, Vegas is arguably, you know, on par with Colorado. And so, you know, they made some adjustments. Obviously, Marc-Andre Fleury came in and played well after that. And, you know, they executed their game plan really well, and their depth showed up, and you know, that ended up being a huge factor as well. And you know, when you look at it, you know, Nazem Kadri not playing due to suspension, you know, that's a huge loss for the Avs second line, and Eric Johnson not being on the back end. I mean, that's a defenseman that can play you know, any type of game, whether it's a skating game or you know, a physical game, and I think the Avs missed him a bunch as well.
Yeah, I certainly didn't mean to imply it was inferior competition. We know it wasn't that. We said as much off the top of our show today. It's a really good team that Colorado lost to. I think we all just thought that Colorado was going to get back on track and win a game after the series got tied at two. You mentioned Nazem Kadri. We've been debating that this morning as well. What difference would he have made in this series? How do you believe he could have altered it?
Well, when you look at Vegas and their top two lines, you know, they just, you can kind of, you know, interchange those two. And when you, you know, with Colorado, you obviously have the MacKinnon line and, you know, they move Brandon Saad up there. They've moved Burakovsky up there, but, you know, having that second line center that really matches up to whoever Vegas is putting out there, it makes a huge difference. And it's nothing, you know, not trying to take anything away from a guy like Tyson Jost. You know, but he was playing essentially third line center minutes for a good portion of the year. And, you know, you got to step into playoffs against guys that are, you know, playoff tested and have had success. And, it's, you know, it was a tall task. And, you know, that was one of the factors that came into play. You know, the Vegas fourth line, arguably one of the top two or three fourth lines in the NHL, played really well, scored a few times during the series. And, you know, we talk about this all the time on Altitude, but your first and second liners get you to the playoffs and your third and fourth liners win you playoff rounds. And if you can have that depth scoring, it makes a huge difference in getting you through a playoff round.
You know, as you said off the top of the interview, John Michael, look, they lost to a really, really good team in Vegas. It's not necessarily something to hang your head about, but if you are trying to look for ways to tweak this roster going into next year, is that where you'd look first? As you say, the bottom six, the third and fourth lines, improving those to put them in a position to win a playoff series for Colorado?
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they go down that road. And, you know, there's some free agency needs to address. You have Philip Grubauer's unrestricted free agent, Gabe Landeskog unrestricted. Cale Makar, his next contract is going to be a huge effect on exactly what the Avs can do. I just look at Tampa over the course of the last, say, 5 or 6 years and the success they've had, but also the, I don't want to say letdowns, but the, you know, the heartbreaking losses in the playoffs and how they address that through whether it's trades at the deadline or free agency pickups. And I think that's a really good blueprint, not that every other team in the NHL isn't trying to do that as well. But the Avs arguably have some of the pieces that, you know, that could counter Tampa's skill. And it's adding those pieces like the Blake Colemans or the Barkley Gaudreaus or the Pat Maroons that can give you that not only depth in the playoffs, but that grit that if you do get into a gritty kind of, bogged down series, which, Vegas can do that. They really control the neutral zone in games 2 through 5. That's I think where, maybe Joe Sakic and his staff look to address more than, maybe a top end skill guy.
From what you've seen so far today from fans, what you've heard from fans, what you've seen from other members of the media in Colorado, which part of the Avalanche organization, whether it's a player, coach, front office, is taking the most criticism right now?
Oof. I've kind of seen the entire spectrum. People want to point fingers at whatever suits the narrative. there's people that have, taken shots at Jared Bednar, Joe Sakic, and top players for the Avs, bottom players for the Avs, defenders for the Avs, goaltending for the Avs. Listen, it's a disappointing loss, especially when you win the President's Trophy. But realistically, you ended up with the same number of points as Vegas. It was a good team. It's unfortunate that Vegas and Colorado are meeting in the second round is the reality of it. And I don't know. I don't necessarily know that you can point at one thing. Vegas made some adjustments that worked really well. I think the Avs arguably dominated games 5 and 6. Sometimes that's the way it goes. You get a bounce here or there, much like the block shot in overtime in game 5 that leads to a Mark Stone breakaway. The Avs dominated for large stretches of that game and could have easily won. So I think that once again, you take a step back and I don't see them blowing this team up by any means or moving any huge pieces. I think that there are some players that could come into play in the summer to maybe add a piece here or there that they think they might need going forward. But realistically, you have a really good team at a lot of good cap numbers, and your team is young as well. You don't have a ton of aging players on the roster.
Yeah, no team has a better case for let's run it back than the Colorado Avalanche of those who've been ousted so far. They should run it back. That's exactly what they should do. John Michael Lyles, analyst now with Altitude Sports in Denver, joining us here on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. You played in Toronto, you played in Denver, so you understand the two markets as well as anybody, and you know the scrutiny Nazem Kadri was under because of suspensions in Toronto. How is that viewed in Denver now that it's a third suspension, though it's the first time it's happened with the Avs in the postseason?
Well, listen, people are aware of, what happened in Toronto everybody's so quick to jump on that narrative, that bandwagon of when he made that hit on Justin Falk. And it was a bad hit, and I'm not justifying it whatsoever, but that's the type of player that Nas is. I played with him in Toronto. He plays that game on the edge, and occasionally he's going to go over the line. And you know what? Honestly, he's fit in so well with Colorado. He's a great number two center behind Nathan MacKinnon. He adds so much. He brings that physicality, that edge, that desire to win. And it's just unfortunate that it's happened at the time it did. And he didn't get to play a game in the series against Vegas, because they definitely could have used him. And listen, nobody feels worse than Nas, I would guess, just having played with him and knowing him. But at the same time, he's a guy, like, you want him playing on the edge. That's when he's at his best.
So because you know him and because you've been a player before, take us inside the mind of play. Do you worry at all about his mindset moving forward? Because you know how much athletes internalize the "I let my team down" narrative. Do you worry at all about his mental makeup moving forward?
No, not at all. It's probably devastating right now. It's devastating for every guy in that room, not just Nas. Every guy in that room feels like they let their team down in the sense, like, you're not in the playoffs anymore. You didn't get to move on. You got beat by Vegas. And I think Nas is no different. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to play any games in this series, but I think, he's like, there's a reason why you're in the NHL. It's because not only do you have the the physical gifts, the athletic gifts, but you have the mental makeup to be there. And, you know, with, I think with time comes clarity, and, you know, he'll be just fine going into next season.
As you mentioned earlier in this interview, John Michael, there are some contractual decisions to be made, and Kale McCarr is at the top of that list, Gabriel Landeskog's at the top of that list, despite their different free agent status. Philip Grubauer's on that list. He's coming off a Vezina season, but he's not going to be the priority contractually in Colorado. How interchangeable do you consider the goaltending with this team?
I don't know. I don't necessarily know that it's really interchangeable at this point in time, because Devin Dubnyk's the backup and he's unrestricted. Pavel Francouz didn't play any games this year because he was hurt. So it's, you know, I think there's going to be a priority to sign him as well. And, you know, people pointed fingers at Grubauer in the last game, but at the same time, he was arguably, as big a rock on that team as anybody this year. Vezina caliber season. And, I just, you know, looking at the available free agents goaltender wise going forward, I don't know that that the Avs are putting him on the back burner. I would say he's probably right up there, with Gabe Landeskog and Kale McCarr's contract. I think arguably could have a pretty big trickle down effect on whether or not the Avs are able to keep Landeskog as well as Grubauer.
You mentioned Kale McCarr's contract, obviously a huge piece of business that they have to take care of. Do you expect it will be a bridge deal, a short-term deal, which we've seen from a lot of high-end RFAs recently, or is there any chance that they try to work out a long-term extension for their star blue liner?
It wouldn't shock me if it's a bridge deal, just because I think that it does buy the Avs a little bit of time and some flexibility. But at the same time, I mean, this is a guy that you want on your blue line for the next 8 years. He's played 101 regular season games. He's a Norris Trophy finalist. I mean, it's pretty astounding what he's doing on a nightly basis, and the influence and impact that he can have on a game. He just does things that nobody else can do, and he doesn't sacrifice his defensive responsibilities, and those are only going to get better with such a short sample size that he's played thus far in his career. So I could see it going either way. If I'm the Avs, I'm probably thinking more of a bridge deal to give them some flexibility, because you probably want to keep Gabe Landeskog. He's your captain. He's been there since the start of his career. He brings so much to that team. I just look at game one against St. Louis when he fought Braden Schenn. I'm not going to say it turned the tide of the series, but St. Louis came out and they were playing well, and that fight arguably galvanized the crowd, and the Avs were pretty much unstoppable after that.
I wanted to ask about Jared Bednar as well, because, you know, through the course of the regular season, we talked to a couple of former players on the show who had played for Bednar, and they raved about him as a coach and as a person. You know, for those of us who don't get to watch Colorado day in, day out like you do, how would you evaluate the job that Bednar has done as coach of this team?
Well, I think he's done a fantastic job. Knowing him away from the rink, I obviously haven't had him as a coach, but knowing him away from the rink, he's a great person. He's a player's coach. I know all the guys that I know on the team really like him and enjoy having him as a coach. And I think he's done a fantastic job. When you look at where this team was in the 48-point season, what was that? I don't know, 5 years ago? And now, you know, where he's taken them, where Joe Sakic has taken them, and what they've been able to do. I mean, I just think that it's pretty special what they have, and a couple pieces here and there. And I think that, this team could arguably be in the Stanley Cup final. So, once again, I don't think that it's something you're necessarily taking a flamethrower to. I think you're probably just doing a few tweaks here and there with that lineup.
He doesn't get the gloss of some of the other top coaches, but I can tell you this anecdotally. We did a show in the last couple of months where we talked about the best coaches in the NHL, and we brought on a couple of guys who'd played in the show recently, and we said to them, hey, if you could go play for any coach in the NHL right now, who would it be? And both of them who came on said Jared Bednar, which, again, no disrespect to him, but because he's not generally talked about as much, I was a little bit surprised they said it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say he flies under the radar, but, a little bit, in Denver and you're not in maybe a New York or a Toronto or even like an L.A. or a Vancouver. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe he is a bit under the radar, but, I mean, just rave reviews from most, every guy that I know that has played for him. He expects a lot of his players, but he also he's a player's coach and he's gonna work with you to try and get the best out of each and every guy. And so, I think that, I don't know. It's, I think within the NHL in terms of player wise, I think the secret's out. It's just maybe he doesn't get quite the fanfare that a lot of other maybe big name coaches in bigger markets get.
Unless the Avalanche surprise us by making him a free agent, Seattle can't select him, but they can select a talented player off this roster. They've got protection issues on the back end. They've got a lot of good defensemen. They've only got so many protection slots. What do you do with your protection list on your defensive core? Who gets left unprotected?
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, that's above my pay grade. That's the reason why I'm an analyst and not in the front office. It's going to come down to I don't know. I think it's just going to come down to some really tough decisions. And I don't know that I know which way they're going to go. A lot of it's going to, play into what are the tweaks that the Avs are looking to do with their roster in terms of, okay, how can we have success against a team like Vegas or against a team like Tampa or against some of these teams that are right there year in and year out. And so you've got some tremendous players on that back line, and so do you leave one open up that Seattle could potentially take in order to maybe free up a little salary? I don't know. I think there's a number of ways that could go. And like I said, it's way above my pay grade.
Well, and you talked about the loss of Eric Johnson and what that meant to this Blue. And he's got a no movement clause. So that's a half to protect unless he says otherwise. So it makes your decision that much more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. He's that'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well. You wish him the best because he was out for the majority of the year and he had been skating, and had the Avs gotten through Vegas, we were hoping that he was going to get back into the lineup sooner rather than later.
One way or another, it's going to be a must-watch team again in the National Hockey League this year. I know it's disappointing the way it ended, but boy, they provided some highlights again this season. John Michael, thank you very much for doing this. Continued success with the Wine Cave and all of the television work. We really appreciate you doing this, man.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
That is John Michael Lyles joining us. He's an analyst now with Altitude Sports, former NHL defenseman. So he understands a lot of what Nazem Kadri would go through in both Toronto. He played with him there. He knows the scrutiny. It's different in Denver. The expansion protection issue is fascinating with this team. Jamie, you look at a back end that right now includes Eric Johnson, who has a no move. So unless he says, I'm willing to waive it, you have to protect him on your list. Sam Girard, Devon Toews, Ryan Graves, Cale Makar. Unless you decide to go four or just eight skaters, whoever you want, you get seven forwards, you get three D-men. They've got choices, and they're tough ones.
They've got major choices. It seems like, I think even if Eric Johnson did say, I'm fine to be exposed, that they would still have some really difficult choices to make. If he doesn't say that, then you're basically resigned. Like, you are 100% losing a good player on your blue line. And the interesting thing about it is, if you have one blue liner or one defenseman that you're really want to keep, but you don't have enough protection slots, right? You can justify, hey, we're going to trade this guy rather than lose him for nothing. We'll trade him somewhere else and we'll get something in return. And then Seattle can pick someone that we don't care about as much. But if you have two guys that you really don't want to lose, well, do you even go down the trading route? Because what, you're going to trade one of them and then you'll just lose the other guy anyways, and then you won't have either of them left. So it's a really tricky position for them to be in.
You have to protect Rantanen, MacKinnon, and Landeskog. I know he's an unrestricted free agent, but it's your captain. They're bringing him back. We all know that. Kadri's probably the next guy, you would think,
yep,
that you're protecting. So there's a case to be made with this team that you go 4-4-1. There's a case to be made here. But again, you're going to lose a good player up front as well. Most teams are pretty conventional when it comes to this, and they go 7-3-1. The real question is, does Colorado get aggressive and say, all right, if we're going to lose somebody anyway, there's value to be had on the market? And this is, we're going to talk expansion teams in a minute as it relates to Vegas, whether some people still harbor resentment or not. This is a mistake so many teams made the last time around. I would think they've learned from it. They didn't deal with the open market. They only dealt with Vegas. So
that is going to change. Yeah, I think that's going to change for sure.
I think so as well. So if you're Joe Sakic, do you say, man, there are a lot of teams around this league that would love something off our back end, and we can get something good in return? Do we proactively go do that ahead of the expansion draft? Do we just take our lumps and say, look, we're going to lose a player, accept it, move on? It means that, as John Michael Lausam alluded to, we free up some cap space. It allows us to do other things because we've got some pretty important people to re-sign here. How proactive are you? How much 3D chess are you playing in this if you're Joe Sakic?
Yeah, and they're one of the more interesting teams, right? Because they do have a legitimate case maybe to go with the different, you know, protection breakdown that a lot of teams are going to use. But again, even in that scenario, you're looking at losing one of the big, big pieces of your defense.
Someone says, anyone think Landeskog's done in Colorado? It'd be prime time to transition the C to MacKinnon's chest while Gabe heads to Seattle. I don't think that he's done there. I'll be shocked, in fact, if he's done there with what he's meant to that team and the core nucleus that they've formed in Denver.
I don't know. With the way that line plays together, the success they've had, and the fact that he's the captain, it's really difficult. Like, that seems like the kind of move you make if you are saying, you know what, we have to do some significant remodeling to this team. And I don't think Colorado is there yet, nor should they be there yet. But again, he's the captain. He's a key piece, one of the best lines in hockey. It would be very surprising to see them let him walk.
Over the next few weeks, more people are going to start to hone in on this conversation about protection lists, about what might be out there, about potential moves that could be made. Seattle expansion is on the horizon. We know what happened the last time an expansion draft went down. Are you still upset? Are you upset about Vegas' success? We'll talk about it next right here on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.